This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show.
Previously, last time, Dean and Andy recorded on the Retro Asylum podcast.
Before we started doing the shows, podcasting, we didn't know each other, you know?
No, it's, you know, and like most of the other guys, I found out about you by 8-Bit Wars on YouTube, you know, your video series. And I think I started stalking you, you know, messaging you. And, no, I can't remember how it actually happened, but yeah, we got chatting and, you know, one thing led to another, and that sounds wrong as well. we've become really good friends, and it is through gaming, so...
Well, I think that's what it is. We share that sort of, like, retro gaming experience, the same sort of, like, we're sort of the same sort of age.
Yeah.
And the fact as well that, you know, we both do shift work.
UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 35. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me, as always, is...
Mr. Dean Swain.
Dean.
I'm alive.
You're alive. Wow, I tell you what, we've had a real nightmare recording the last couple of shows, haven't we, mate?
Oh, mate, I tell you, life is so busy, plus technical issues and trying to fit it all in. It has been a complete and utter nightmare.
Yeah, so I want to give out a big special thanks to Damien and Glenn, who recorded that last episode, which was episode 34, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, by the time this one goes out, the last episode would have been episode 34 and a half, which is Matt. But yeah, the boys jumped in at the last minute. It was a very short episode, but
yeah,
done very well for the amount of time they had to try and get it out on time, so to speak. Yeah,
let's give the listeners a little bit of a backstory, Dean, of what actually happened. Because originally it was meant to be me and you, and then something happened where we couldn't do it. I think you said your wife did something to the car?
Yeah, she managed to buckle her offside, the passenger side's front wheel, slid on, I don't know what she actually slid on, but she was on a bend and she buckled that, so I had to go out.
It wasn't like a banana skin like in Mario Kart, was it?
No, it wasn't. I felt like a banana skin, though. I think I had to pay out £190 for a new alloy wheel, which was, yeah, great. Yeah, so crazy stuff's been going on, but that's life.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just like baby got in the way. And then at one point, we were going to do a four-way podcast, me, you, Glenn, Damien, and then you pulled out at the last minute, and then yeah. I thought, right, we're going to do like a 3-8-bit war style podcast, because I'm the Speccy man, Glenn's the C64 man, and Damien's the Amstrad man, and we sat down to record, and my internet was rubbish. It kept on cutting out, and then just as the internet got good, I had to look after the baby, so
yeah.
The guy's done a superb job.
This is the thing, as soon as I'm getting up or coming home from work or whatever, I'm being handed the baby, I think. So, yeah, you know, I know exactly what you're going through, mate. It is very hard when you've got a youngster.
It is extremely tough. All I've done, basically, I've had 3 hours sleep today, so I apologise, guys, if I do sound tired, if Dean sounds tired. Again, we're recording this on the fly, but we do want to give you the best sort of retro gaming podcast, and I think Dean and I are passionate enough about retro gaming that we can come out with an amazing show.
Let's hope so, because yesterday, I've had some sleep today, but I was up over 24 hours yesterday, so I was in bits this morning. But we're going to be good. So let's go.
All right, actually, before we carry on,
yeah.
I want to get some feedback on the last show we did. There was a bit of bromance everyone kept mentioning.
Yeah. That's strange, isn't it? You know, that The episode, when we recorded it, it was complete and utter chaos for us in that we didn't really have a show plan and it was, you know, all on the fly. But people seemed to love it. It was, you know, very popular and, yeah, everyone seems to think me and you have got a bit of a thing going on. Worryingly, we've both got kids, people.
Listening back to it, it was like how you stalked me and then things, one thing led to another. But I'll tell you what, listening to the podcast that Glenn and Damien did, that had me in stitches because the guys were talking about, well, Damien started talking about Willie and, you know, Manic Miner Willie, and he started going on about how he took Willie to space, and I could hear Glenn chuckling, and then they kept on talking about how hard Willie was. That just had me in stitches, man.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Hello, Mr. Sid here. If you're after some retro gaming goodness, then you have come to the right place. From the Speccy to the Sega Master System, Capcom to Codemasters, and Space Invaders to Space Harrier, it's all covered in the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
Let's do what we normally do then. Dane, what have you been up to? Now, I want to hear all about your geek adventures.
Right, okay, yeah. Geek 2013. I met up with Foggy, aka Darren, down at Margate. It was on the Sunday, so this was the last day that the event was being held. Mm-hmm. We got there, I don't know, probably about 20 minutes before the thing was due to open. So we've got into the building and asked for our press passes because, you know, officially we are press. And, yeah, there was some rude guy behind the counter. Basically, there was a couple of ladies behind the counter who were dealing with us, and they've asked this guy who was obviously in charge of the venue. And, he just pretty blasé went, I can't deal with those right now. Tell them to come back later. He's so rude. He's really obnoxious little man. The actual event itself, yeah, it's not on scale with Play Expo and by the sounds of what Revival will be.
Yeah.
You know, there was some nice systems on show. It was a strange day, though. Obviously, me and Darren had never actually met in the flesh.
How did you guys find each other then? How did you know who was who? You know, like, did you go and start talking to some random bloke?
No, it wasn't.
Darren?
I think I was either on the phone to you or I was texting you. I was parked up outside the venue in my rather distinctive little smart car. So, Darren was on the opposite side of the road with his son. He's waved and he could see I was on the phone. So he's seen my face on YouTube.
You recognise you.
not at all. So, yeah, I recognised him instantly from his photo, and it sounds like another bromance, like I've seen his picture on a dating site or something. That was fine. Darren's a really down-to-earth guy, you know, really genuine. So, yeah, we got on straight away. After we was refused entry, first of all, we went to a cafe, and Darren bought me a bacon sandwich, and yeah, I made a mess of that in front of him. So I'm a fat slob. The actual event, it was okay. It was really strange though. There was only two stalls actually selling retro items. And of course, with a lot of these things, they're usually overpriced. Although I did manage to pick up a few Atari 7800 bargains.
Why don't you tell us which games they were and how much you actually got from for, Dean?
All the games I bought were £3. I managed to get a game called Fatal Run, which is quite a late entry on the Atari 7800. That's a bit like Road Blasters.
Okay.
By Atari. Dig Dug.
Classic.
Which is a classic, and the Atari 7800 version is really, really good. The only thing I was quite disappointed was the screen size. It seems, I don't know if it's because it's the PAL version, but the screen size on it's really quite miniature. And the other game I got was Solar Jetman on the NES. Again, £3. You know, they weren't boxed, but Dig Dug and
was the other game. Fatal Run, they're quite rare. They're, you know, very hard to find. So even unboxed on eBay, you're probably looking at a good tenner or so. So, you know,
who were the shops you bought them from? Were there any sort of like big sort of like stall names?
No, they wasn't. The stall that I bought those games from was only tiny. You know, it was literally like a car boot sale sort of size. And they had quite a lot of games on show. But again, you know, a lot of it was overpriced. But the Atari box, it was mainly 2600 games. And, you know, there's a lot of tat on the 2600.
Yeah.
So that meant just going through that lot, and I spotted them too. And, they were bought instantly. And then Solar Jetman, Jetman Spectrum fan. Mm-hmm. I'd never played the game, so, I thought I'd pick that up too.
So what do you think of these games actually now? Have you had the chance to play them now?
I've only tested them to make sure that they work. Fatal Run, quite disappointing, really.
Right.
I had a feeling it would be, though, but, you know, I'm trying to collect a lot of games for 7800. Dig Dug, like I say, very playable game. The screen's a little bit small on this version. Probably doesn't help because I've only got a 14-inch TV.
Yeah.
Sony Trinitron. And Solar Jetman, again, I've only played it for maybe 5 minutes. It's not, you know, not the same kind of game, really, as the originals, but it's still pretty good.
Solar Jetman, Dean, me and you talked about this a couple of weeks ago when the podcast didn't work. Now, wasn't this a game that originally was meant to come out on the ZX Spectrum because Solar Jetman was a character that used to appear in Crash Magazine?
Yeah, it's a rare game, as in the developer rare. It was originally intended for the Nintendo, because by the time it was released, you know, Rare had moved on to the Nintendo big time. They left the Spectrum in the 80s. Storm Software was supposed to be converting it to the ZX Spectrum. And there were screenshots appearing in the magazines, but it was very late in the day. You know, this was in 1991, where the market had dried up more or less completely. Yeah. So I'm guessing the publisher, which was Storm Software, they probably thought, you know, it's not going to be worth releasing it on the Spectrum, which is a shame because, you know, it obviously started its roots there, and it would have been nice to have all three games on the Spectrum, but sadly it wasn't to be.
Well, maybe it would be one of those games that someday might turn up, you know, it will just show up one day and people sort of like be able to play. You never know, these things do happen, games turn up.
I think that the C64 version has actually been found.
Is it? Wow. Well, yeah. That'd be interesting to give that a game a go.
Yeah, definitely.
The thing I was going to say to you next, Dean, now, you know, you're saying you've been collecting games. Now, do you find yourself, since you've been doing the podcast, that's made you actually want to collect games even more, or you've been collecting more, or are you just collecting like the way you used to?
The podcast has definitely made me buy a lot more machines. Before, I would have only probably bought games for machines that I owned when I was young, you know, that I had originally. I now own nearly every console there's, you know, not every console, but I'm missing the PC Engine. I might pick one of those up. I don't know. It's a pretty obscure, really, some of the titles on there. But, you know, I've got a Mega Drive, which I never owned, SNES, a NES. Obviously, I've got the Master System confirmed for the Mega Drive. And, you know, the Atari 7800, I had a 2600, and that's where the interest came from.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, it's backwards compatible, so I can play my 2600 games on there. But it's nice discovering some of these games. You know, on the 7800, there's a lot of tat, really, again. But some of the games are, you know, they're pretty good and still hold up today, playability-wise. So, yeah, you know, the podcast, it opens your eyes a bit more to it. It's... Now, I've always been into classic gaming, but now I'm, you know, working on the podcast, obviously, I have a bigger interest in it. But I do still find myself buying these things and struggling to find the time. But obviously, we've spoke about that in a past episode.
Yeah, now we've slightly gone off topic there, but going back to geek then, so what machines were there? What range of machines?
Pretty much everything. There was a lot of Spectrum Plus 3s they were using for the Spectrum displays. Only one Amstrad CPC, which was running Cybernoid, which was a shame. You know, there's quite a few decent Amstrad games out there, but only the one on display. A few Commodore 64s. As usual with, you know, these things, there was loads of consoles, loads of Mega Drives, a few SNESs, Master Systems, NES, a few Vectrexes, but you know, it was mainly Mega Drives, and of course they always have these Halo competitions at these things, so there's rows and rows of Xbox 360s, which, yeah, I know Geek 2013 wasn't necessarily a retro show, but that's what we were there to see, and it's, I always find it quite disappointing when I see loads and loads of Xboxes, you know, that's not what I'm into anymore. There was a few nice arcade games, although those in pretty bad condition, most of them.
Like which ones then? Which ones did you spot?
Operation Wolf, Operation Thunderbolt. There was a nice cocktail cabinet there, which was running MAME. There was another normal arcades base running MAME. They had, you know, Street Fighter 2. To be honest, I can't really remember. I think they had Star Wars. No, did they have Star Wars? No, they didn't. They had a Star Wars pinball machine.
Right.
That was actually up for sale. Yeah,
really? Was, how much was that going for then?
It didn't say. There was a number on it to call. Yeah, I would have been interested, but obviously, as I was saying to Darren at the time, the trouble with most UK homes, you know, unless you're pretty well off, you don't have the room for these sort of things.
Yeah, it's like, where do you put these things? Like me, I mean, you see my shed, it's not much room. But anyway, you said that Darren went there with his son then. So how old was Darren's son, and what was his view on the whole retro sort of thing, do you reckon?
I think he liked it. He's 11 years old, so, you know, some of the stuff he was looking at, I think I showed him RoboCop on the ZX Spectrum, and he just looked at me with a blank expression on his face to say, are you having a laugh? Yeah, you know, some of the Sega stuff, you know, your Mega Drive and your SNESes and what have you. But some of the games, I think they still hold up pretty well today visually, you know. So he was getting into Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat and a few others. But yeah, I think he was probably more interested in Halo and what else was being shown on the Xbox.
Yeah, I suppose it's that sort of generation, though. It's what you grow up with, you know.
Yeah, it's you know, the old nostalgia thing. And
yeah,
I think people our age can really appreciate the older style graphics and sound, whereas, you know, someone who's not grown up with it, they'll probably look at it and say, yeah, it's a bit crap, isn't it?
Before we round up the Geek thing, you said that they had, like, this big awkward talk as well.
Yeah, it was strange because, obviously, on a Sunday, it was winding down quite a bit.
Yeah.
So there was, surprisingly, it's quite a few families there, you know, it was couples with their young kids, and I guess they were just trying to show them what, you know, their parents had grown up with, you know, game-wise. And over the Tannoy, there was an announcement. I couldn't believe this. I was shaking my head. There was going to be a discussion on lesbian and gay game characters appearing in, you know, games throughout the decades, and I'm to myself, well, I know Manic Miner had a funny walk, you know, Jet Set Willy and all that, but was he gay? Maybe he was, I don't know, but, you know, does it really matter? Yeah, you know, I can think of probably one game on the PlayStation.
I can think of one as well, actually, but on the Mega Drive.
Yeah, well, I've got to admit, I don't really go in for that sort of thing. So.
No, it makes no real difference, really. And I think it's, I don't know, it's kind of pointless. I think it should just be about the gaming. But talking about the gay character, my favourite character, it has to be in Streets of Rage 3. It's the extremely camp bloke, very sort of like the Blue Oyster style, Police Academy style. And it's absolutely hilarious, really, really camp. It's tongue-in-cheek, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at games like Final Fight and some of the way they're dressed up and whatever. Maybe they're, you know, but to have a discussion on it at one of these things, I just thought, Jesus, is this what, you know, gaming's coming to? It's a bit sad, really.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's round that bit up and we'll tell you a little bit about what I've been up to. Now, Dean, again, like I said, it's been hard for me to do a lot of gaming, but I have been playing a couple of games. I've been playing a game on the ZX Spectrum called Werewolves of London. Have you played this before?
I've not played it. I've seen video footage of it. I've seen the screenshots. I read the reviews back in the day. I never did pick it up.
It's not a great game, but there's just something about it, Dean, that just really draws me into it. Let me quickly tell the listeners what the story is about. So obviously you're this guy that's been cursed by, I think, seven or ten people, and you've turned into a werewolf. And the beautiful thing is, you can sort of like, when it's daytime, you're a human. When it's nighttime, when the full moon's out, you turn into a werewolf. Now, when you're a werewolf, you can go around London, basically, stalking the people that cursed you, and you get to eat them, and you have to avoid the police chasing after you. If the police catch you, they put you in prison. And it's a nice, interesting idea. I've not finished it, and I've been playing that. So the good thing I liked about this, originally when I had it, Dean, it came on a double-sided tape. One side was ZX Spectrum, and the other side was Amstrad.
Ah, flippy floppy cassette, or whatever they were called.
Yeah, so it was nice because I could play it both on the Spectrum and the Amstrad, and it was nice to see how the versions varied. The Amstrad obviously was a lot more colourful, but it seemed a lot more blockier, and I didn't quite get why it was. It just seemed a lot more squished, whereas the Spectrum, the sprites seemed a lot bigger and nicer.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the general capability of the Amstrad. Unfortunately, you know, when they go for the colourful graphics, things do tend to get a bit more blocky, whereas with the Spectrum, obviously, less colour, but nice high-res graphics, really. Not high-res as in, you know, what we're used to today, of course, but, yeah, compared to the other systems, the Spectrum's graphics were quite defined and, you know, could be really detailed.
Right, now the other game I was playing as well, Dean, and I actually finished it, was a game called Gunfighter, and it's a great little game, Dean. It's like it scrolls from left to right. You play a little cowboy, obviously you're in a western sort of like town, and all of a sudden these little posters come up and it tells you who's wanted. Sometimes it's like another cowboy, and it's up to you. You get 6 bullets and you have to try and track him. You get shot once, you're dead, it's game over. So, and every time you use a bullet, if you use all of them back up, you've got no more bullets. You have to go back to the sheriff's office, basically, to refill. So you've got to be careful with your ammo. And I really played this game non-stop, Dean. And I tell you what, I loved it. It's so simple, but it's got so much charm in it, Dean.
Right, I'm trying to picture it. Was it a budget release?
Yeah, it was a budget release. It came out for about $2.99. I mean, I don't know that if many people actually played it, but it's just little things made it work. I mean, they've got like a little shop that you go into, and it's got like a little gambling section where the money that you've earned from capturing the bad guys or killing the bad guys, you can use to gamble. And it's just little touches like that that made it worthwhile. And it just goes to show what the programmers could do with a budget game. It was nice, and that's what I used to love about budget games back in the day.
Yeah, there's some superb games. I think I'm going to have to check this out on my spanking new 1-to-8K machine that I managed to pick up the other day.
Yeah, Dean, why don't you tell us about this, mate?
This is bargain of the year. This has made people
bargain of the year
envious. I felt like Arthur Daly had scammed someone. I felt quite guilty. Yeah, you know, every now and then you look on eBay and various other sites, and this happens to be on Gumtree. It was a 1-to-8K toast rack model, which was the last Sinclair-made machine before Amstrad took over. It's one of those machines that is strange. You know, it is a sexy little computer. I know.
You're getting crazy. A bit excited about a Spectrum.
I am. It is a cool-looking machine. It really is. The design on it is really is the best-looking Spectrum. And I've always wanted one. Anyway, I've gone onto Gumtree, done a search, and there's a guy advertising one for £15, and it was boxed.
Wow.
Yeah, I've looked on the photos. There isn't a mark on it. So I've sent an email. Didn't hear anything for a day or two. He's got back to me. You know, still for sale. I asked him if it had a power supply. Yes, it did, but no cassettes or games. It just had manuals, you know. Anyway, a few emails backwards and forwards. I went and collected it the other night. It is absolutely mint. The only thing is that sometimes with these models, the membrane under the keyboard that basically registers all the key inputs, they, after 30 years of being in there, they start breaking up and go a bit rotten. So I've got to get a new one of those, and some of the keys have stopped working, and that's actually costing me more than what the Spectrum cost me. I think the membrane was about £16.
Right.
So, but even so, you know, a 1-to-8K toast rack for £31, that's still a bargain. These things are going for £90 plus on eBay. So
now, are you going to keep this? Are you going to put it? Are you going to sell it on eBay for a higher price? What are you going to do?
I probably will keep this one because it is such a nice looking machine. I've got a Mint Plus 2A, which was the black Spectrum Plus 2. I might bung that on eBay now.
Yeah.
So get rid of that, because I prefer, you know, the Sinclair branded well, they're both Sinclair branded, but yeah, the proper Sinclair model.
Before Amstrad, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. So
have you had a chance to load up any games on this then?
I have, and you know, I've been doing it through the iPhone.
Specky tape?
Miracle with technology. Yep, specky tape, and it works really well. Apart from, you know, on some games, they, you know, the keys that I want to use aren't really working. O and P for left and right.
Oh man.
But yeah, I've ordered the membrane, so as soon as that arrives, I'll swap that over. There's a fairly good guide on YouTube from Mark Fixes Stuff. So yeah, that talks you through how to do it. It's fairly easy. So yeah, it shouldn't be a problem.
That's good stuff, mate. Good stuff.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into Retro Asylum Podcast.
So now it's time, guys, for site news and announcements. So our first bit of site news is Revival. Now, Dean, tell us a little bit about Revival.
It's a nice big retro show, a little bit up north. And that's pretty
much... Wow. A little bit up north. You should get into advertising.
I should do. You know more about it than I do because you've got tickets to give away.
Right, well, I'll move on to that in a second. Now, Revival is a two-day event. It's happening in May. It's being run by Chris Wilkins from Retro Fusion. And I tell you what, guys, you have to get tickets for this. You have to actually attend this. This is going to be the biggest retro gaming event that we've actually ever had here in the UK. And we've got some amazing retro legends attending. I don't know how Chris has done this, but Chris has really sort of just... made this happen, and I'm so excited about this. And the most exciting thing is about this event is Chris was kind enough to give us 10 free tickets. A while ago, I announced a competition on how you could win a set of tickets. Now, the way this is going to work is every full episode of the podcast, I'm going to give away two tickets by doing different competitions. And the winner of this first competition...
Hi guys, now this is a bit of a post-edit. Now the reason why I'm doing this is because I want to announce the winners for Revival. Now before I announce who the winner is, I want to quickly recap on how the competition went. Now basically what actually happened is, I set a competition with a time of I think 39 seconds on Sonic the Hedgehog level 1. Now, to win these two tickets to Revival, which were kindly donated by Chris Wilkins, all the guys had to do was try and get the fastest time. And I tell you what, we had a real competitive sort of like match with this. It kept them going between Porl, I think his name is, P-O-R-L, and quite a few people gave it a go. But Porl and TMC, they gave it the best shot, and they kept on battling out between them, going from 30 something seconds to 27 seconds, and eventually the winner is TMC. Now he managed to do it in an incredible 26 seconds, and wow, that's got to be some sort of record. According to Mr. Sid, that's actually a record somewhere. Don't know how true that is, but hey, you know what, you are the winner, TMC, to two tickets for the Saturday for Revival. Now guys, I will be running another competition. Now, once again, it's another gaming competition, and you can win two more tickets for the Saturday at Revival, which once again was kindly donated by Chris Wilkins, who's organizing Revival. Now this time round, the challenge, I'm going to upload my video tomorrow, and I'll tell you how you can win this set of tickets. Now, all you need to do is have the ROM, or should I say the game, of California Games on the Sega Master System. Now that's got loads of different games which are really, really good, but there's one that I want to see who can get the best score out of, and that is on the surfing level. Surfing level is a fun little game. So guys, I'm going to upload a video. You'll see it on the forum in the next couple of days. Try and get the best thing, and the winner will get two tickets to Revival. So yeah, carry on the show, guys.
Now, the next thing is, what is it? Once Upon a Console. Now, Once Upon a Console is something, another thing that I'm really looking forward to. I don't know how many of our listeners live in London, but if any of our listeners live in London, there's two events happening very, very shortly. There's one happening at the end of this month, which I'm going to attend. I don't know if you are, Swainy.
I've got the day off, so I should be able to make it.
Right, do you know the date of this by any chance? Or?
I can't remember details like that. I'm a busy man.
Right, I tell you what then, since you're so busy, let me bring this up on the forum and we'll have a little look. Now, this little meetup, and it's actually being held in Hackney. And basically what it is, it's being held up, I think, in the cinema, actually. Where is it? Is it in the Ritzy? Where is it? The Hackney Picture House. And they're going to have gaming, you know, competitions there that you can play, stuff like Mario Kart and so on. It looks really interesting. It's Wednesday, the 20th of March. I can't wait to go to this. It's not. I'm really excited about this, Dean. And talking about retro events, guys, I was talking to Dean, and eventually we are going to be doing our own retro sort of meetups. And I've got my own little spin on it. We're going to start off small, and then hopefully that works. We're going to start making them that little bit bigger. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, watch this space.
Right, and let me quickly announce the next Once Upon a Console meetup. It's on the 22nd of April, and that is upstairs at the Ritzy in Brixton. But guys, if you're free on the 20th of March, you've got to go. We'll be there, me and Swainy. It's in Hackney. Drop us an email if you want to sort of meet up, and we'll definitely hang out and play some games.
Yeah, and we're leaving off for protection, weren't we? Because, you know, Hackney and Brixton, bit of a rough area, both of them. But, you know, safe, safe. Oh, wow, come in, boys, you know what I mean? I shouldn't do that, should I?
Hello everybody, this is Damien, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Right, so what's the next section then, Dean? You got a review for us?
I've got a review. I'm going to review Zub on the ZX Spectrum.
Zub? What is Zub? I've never heard of it.
Well, you've never heard of it?
It sounds like you're saying, what's up?
What's up? It was originally supposed to be called Zob, and apparently that's a swear word in French.
Is it? What does it mean in French?
I don't know, I should have looked that up. I did mean to, actually, but I forgot.
Anyway, go for it,
anyway,
buddy.
Anyway, Zub, it was a budget game. It was released on Mastertronic's Mad label, and I believe it was the first game to be done on the Mad label. It was programmed by the legendary Pickford brothers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, John and Steve Pickford. It was the first game that they actually worked on together as a team while they were at Binary Design. And, the idea of the game is basically you're controlling a little alien with a fishbowl on his head as a helmet sort of thing. So he's quite a funny-looking character. Yeah, it's like a little platform come shoot 'em up. You've got to work your way up to the top of the screen. The screen moves from left to right as well, and you've got these sliding platforms moving left and right, and you've got to jump on each one, work your way up to a part of the screen where you can teleport onto the next level. While you're jumping onto the platforms, you're being attacked by other little aliens. Some of them just push you off the platforms, others zap your energy as well. It's all on the 128K machine. It's got a wonderful, wonderful set of music by David Whittaker. Lovely soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a lovely little budget game. I can't believe you've never played it.
No, I'm just, while you've been telling me a little bit about it, I've actually been looking for it on my iPhone,
right.
And the character sprite looks very, very familiar, but it's a game I remember sort of seeing in the magazines, but it's a game that I actually didn't play, and this is what I love about doing this podcast and sort of YouTube and all these other things, is because people mention games that I remember, but haven't really played, and it makes me want to play this game. And this is the whole point of this show, I guess, to make people sort of remember and pick up these things once again.
Yeah, it's this game, I played it back in the day. It can be very, very frustrating because the idea, obviously, is to get to the top of the screen. The screen scrolls up, and sometimes while you're on these platforms, like, as I said, some of these aliens can actually push you off the platforms. And if you get pushed off, you know, you fall the way down to the bottom, and you've got to try and make your way back up if you've got enough energy. It's just, to be honest, the game doesn't feel finished, and it probably wasn't. You know, it's probably, a lot of these budget games were rushed out, you know, probably had, I don't know, 8 weeks spent programming it, and then, you know, they rush it out. But it's got some lovely presentation. It's got like a James Bond gun barrel sequence at the beginning. What? But with this weird looking character, he's really animated in a weird way, really well, but he's just got a really weird campy walk. Yeah, and all the menu system on it is really done nicely. Like I said, the music's really nice. It was also released on the Amstrad and C64, so, you know, it's not just a Spectrum game. And I do believe those versions are pretty decent. And there's even a little shoot-em-up hidden in the game if you activate the cheat mode called Lightfast, which was a take on Lightforce, which was another Spectrum shoot-em-up. Yeah, so, you know, for £2, you couldn't go wrong back in the day. And it's a nice game to go back to, spend half hour on once in a while.
All right, let's review this game then, Dean. So, like, graphics then, out of 5, what would you score this game graphically?
Graphically, I'll give it a 4. It's a bit bland looking, like, in regards to the backgrounds, but the actual characters themselves, you know, they're really nicely drawn, nicely animated. Yeah, 4 out of 5 on graphics.
What about sound? This track?
Sound is top notch. That's going to get a 5 out of 5. The AY chip is being pushed here. There's a few spot effects from the 48k beeper for the, you know, the sound effects. But if you've got a 128k machine, oh yes, good times.
All right, and what about playability?
Playability, I'm going to give a 4 out of 5. It can be frustrating, but at the same time, very rewarding.
And here's a word they're making up, ageability. What would you score that out of 5?
I'd probably give that a 3 out of 5.
So overall, Dean, what would you score the game?
I'll give it a 4 out of 5. It's a good game.
Not a bad little game. I'm definitely going to have to check it out.
Hello, this is Potty Boy, and you're listening to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
Okay, so yeah, guys, now this next section is arcade conversions. Now, the whole point of this topic here that we're talking about is to talk about some of the best arcade conversions out there. Now, the first game I want to talk about is Action Fighter on the Sega Master System. Now, this is a game that I had on my Sega Master System, obviously, and I absolutely loved it. It was one of the first games I had. It was pretty cheap when it came out on the Master System. And I actually find it better than the actual arcade game, Dean. Have you played the arcade or the Master System game?
I've played neither, so I'm completely in the dark here.
Right, now, Action Fighter, the arcade game, was like a rip-off or an homage to Spy Hunter. You basically played this motorbike or a little sort of helicopter that flew around. You had, it varied between different levels, like different stages and different sections. Now, the beautiful thing about the Sega Master System was that you could transform.
Ooh.
Now, the way this works on the Sega Master System, you start off as a little motorbike, and if you collect enough letters, a little truck, I think it was a Sega truck, appears, and you get to go in it, and basically you turn into a little red car. You collect some more letters, and then you turn into a little spaceship, and then your car flies up into the sky, and it's like a little sort of like shoot 'em up. And I tell you what, it's not the greatest game ever, but it's so nicely done. Bright colours, you know, really catchy music, and I actually find it so much better than the arcade game. I've played the arcade game on MAME recently, and I just, it hasn't got the same charm, Dean. I don't know why, it just didn't.
Some games do work better at home. Do you know, I kind of do remember the game. I'm sure that it is actually like a semi-official follow-up to Spy Hunter, because Sega were involved in the publishing Spy Hunter on the arcade. Although it was a midway game, I think they might have distributed it. So, yeah, I've got a feeling it might be like an unofficial follow-up.
Well, that's good to know, because I had no idea about that, because it always felt pretty much like a spiritual sequel because of the little truck that comes along, the one that you go inside. Do name the game?
Yeah, why not?
Who's gonna go first, me or you?
I don't know, so I haven't got one.
All right, I've got one, okay, so guys, this is my favorite section of the whole podcast, name the game. Now Dean, you've got to say your catchphrase.
Name the game.
Glenn's gonna love that. Glenn,
it turns him on.
It does. Right, so the way this works, guys, if you haven't heard this before, is it's a little bit of fun and game where you have to try and guess and try and beat Dean before he guesses the game that I'm thinking about. Now, I can only answer in yes and no. I could be kind and give Dean a little bit of a hint. Now, Dean, are you ready to name that game?
Go for it. Is it an arcade game?
It is.
Is it a platform game?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the character blonde?
Yeah.
Is it Wonder Boy?
It's not Wonder Boy.
Damn.
Not making that easy for you.
No. Who else is blonde in platform gaming?
It could be Brownie Blonde, if memory serves me right. But guys, if you can think of this, try and beat Dean before Dean gets this.
Oh, blimey.
Do you want a clue?
Yes, please.
It was converted. It's one of my favourite arcade conversions on a Sega Master System.
No, that doesn't help whatsoever.
I don't think I've told you about this game. I'll give our listeners a bit of a clue. Now, the arcade version is, I think it's got less levels than the Sega Master System version. There's two Master System versions. There's the US version, which has even got, it's only got a few levels, and the UK version's got additional levels. Can you guess what game that is, Dean?
None whatsoever. I didn't realise there was differences between some of the Master System games with the American releases. Is it published by Capcom?
Nope.
No. Oh, blimey. I really don't know this time. I'm not really pretty good at this.
It's published by Sega.
Published by Sega on the Master System. Arcade conversion.
You play... It's based around pirates. I'll give that a clue.
Pirates. Yeah. Blimey. Pirates and Sega. No, I really... I might have to give up.
Really?
Yeah, for the first time ever. Maybe.
Well, you didn't ask enough questions. I don't know whether you would have got it or not.
I really can't think of any games to do with pirates by Sega.
It's Captain Silver.
Captain Silver.
Does it ring a bell?
No, not whatsoever.
Wow. We'll talk a little bit more about this when we get to our main topic of the week.
Yeah.
Right, so Dean, let me guess your game then. So you thought of one?
I have thought of one.
Right, so this is an arcade game.
It is an arcade game.
Right, okay. Is it made by Sega?
No.
Is it made by Capcom?
No.
Is it made by Konami? Konami, is it?
Konami,
that's it.
No.
Taito?
No.
Well, Atari?
Yes.
Atari, right, okay. So it's an Atari game.
Do you want a clue?
Is it a racing game?
No.
It's not a racing game, it's then a game by Atari. Is it a shoot-em-up?
Yes. Yep, it's classed as a shoot-em-up.
So it's a shoot 'em up. Did it come out in the early 80s?
No, it's actually late 80s, and I'll give you a clue. It's got a very, very long title.
Wow, okay. It's got a very long title. It's a shoot 'em up. Does it scroll vertical or horizontally? Is it a horizontal shoot 'em up?
No.
So it obviously scrolls the other way?
It scrolls every way you want it to scroll.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Was this converted at all to the 8-bit computers?
It certainly was. By Domark, there's a big clue.
Oh, wow. All right, so this rings a bell. What could it be? Do you control a little man, or is it a vehicle? All right, is it a little man that you control?
It is a little man that you can control, yes.
Right, okay.
And it's got two-player mode where someone else can control a little man.
you control two little men.
You can control two little men if you so wish.
Oh man, you know what, Dane? I'm going to give up. We're useless this week. So
right.
Tell me what it is. Put me out my misery.
It is Escape from the Planet of the Robot Monsters.
Oh, man, you know what? Oh, I love that game.
It's a great game.
I love that game, and I think we're going to have to do a whole podcast dedicated to Atari arcade games because they had such a distinctive style when they did their games.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that was one of my favourites. And just sticking with that game, Spectrum Pool, I didn't like it, and I wanted
really?
To. Yeah, the controls.
I love the
rubbish.
No, the controls are horrible, but I like the graphical little cutscene sort of thing.
Yeah,
very
the presentation on it was great. Mm. But the controls, yeah, it just didn't work really, which was a shame because you know it was a really nice game.
Now, guys, this next section is called Music from the Past, and this is the part where our listeners get to have their say and choose the music they would like to actually have in the podcast. And the way you can do this, if you want to do this in the future, is you go onto the forum, you go into Site and Podcast Stuff, and there's a section called Music from the Past. And all you have to do is put down the track you want to hear, tell us a little bit about why you like it, and we'll read it out and obviously play it on the show. So, Dean, what is this track from, and who is it by? I mean, who suggested it?
Right. It was Scope who suggested it, and the track is from the Amiga version of The Spy Who Loved Me. Also, can I just say, guys, please do select decent music, so we're not going to be playing Pokemon here. Not while I'm on this show. Okay? Decent music!
Right, so guys, sit back and enjoy this track chosen by Scopey. So, Dean, you're not going to do a little dance for us this time?
No, I was actually going to do my very best James Bond impression. Yes.
Go on, then.
Yes, Miss Moneypenny. It's rubbish!
Right. Oh, you know what I completely forgot to mention, by the way, that what we are doing, I was meant to mention this on the site and announcements section, we are looking for two new hosts for the Retro Asylum podcast.
Wow, am I out of a job?
Nah, we'll never get rid of you, mate. We'll never get rid of you.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
Now, the way you can do this, guys, is, like, it's going to be similar to the X Factor. We are going to audition for two new hosts. We're looking for one male, one female. And all you need to basically have is just a passion for retro games. Now, send me a message on the forum or email me at andy@retroasylum.com and let me know if you'd be interested. And what we'll do, we'll have you as a guest on the podcast. And then our listeners will listen to all these guest shows, and then they will basically pick who the next co-host will be of the Retro Asylum podcast. So, yeah, so what do you think of this idea then, Dean?
Well, I want to know who's going to be Simon Cowell and who's going to be Louis Walsh.
I want to know who's going to be Talisa.
Now, sod it. Let's get Minogue back on the show.
NASA, give me the Cyber Razor Cut.
Cyber Razor Cut.
Let's move on to our next main topic of the podcast, which is Sega.
Sega, the machines I don't know about.
Right, now this is going to be interesting. Now, Dean.
Yes.
I've been wanting to talk to you about Sega for absolutely ages. Now, all right, I never actually had heard or even played. It's called the SG-100. What's your knowledge on this console? Or you don't know it hardly at all?
I hardly know it at all. A predecessor to, well, I think, was it the Japanese equivalent to the Master System, or was it the machine before the Master System?
It was, I think it was the machine before, because I've seen some of the games on it and they're very, very basic looking.
Right, okay.
So I don't know too much about that, guys, but that was probably, it's a machine that I probably will want to get. Now, the next machine on the list is the Sega Master System. Now, this is one of my favorite consoles ever. I love this console. I stupidly gave it away, my console, a couple of years ago because I was being nice and I had no space in the house. But I think the Master System is one of the most underrated machines ever. What's your view on it?
I love it. Obviously, it didn't go down too well in America because the Nintendo Entertainment System had basically stolen the market from, you know, everyone else. But over here in Europe and in the UK, it was, you know, it done really well, and there was lots and lots of different games released on it. Obviously, the bugbear with the playing the games is the flickery graphics. That does get on my nerves a bit. But yeah, there's some great games on it, and as you say, it's, it goes under the radar these days. You know, it's a forgotten console by a lot of people, and it's a shame because, you know, there's some really great games on it. The good thing about it, like the Mega Drive, it's cheap to collect for.
Now, I'll tell you what, Dean, I absolutely love this console. And the reason why I love it so much was because I had it as a kid growing up. It was my evolution from having the ZX Spectrum and the Amstrad, and C64 was the Sega Master System. And it was like me playing all my arcade conversions. I was a big Sega arcade fan, and it was amazing. It had some amazing arcade conversions like Golden Axe, Action Fighter, Enduro Racer, which was slightly different. It was a 3D isometric thing.
A very good game as well. It was, you know, still a playable game, although it was totally different to the arcade game. I think that was actually the first game I played on it. And
really?
Yeah, because one of my friends had one, and I remember going around there playing on that. I remember when he got Double Dragon, I wouldn't leave his house because it was a lot better than the Spectrum version in a weird way. Yeah, and it's, I've told this story before in that I used to work on a stall down Roman Road.
Yeah.
It was a computer stall. It was in an indoor market, and I remember I nearly got the sack because we had these Master Systems and they were chained up, and someone somehow stole one, and my boss, he'd done his nut. You know, they were quite expensive when they first come out, and it was a busy Saturday, you know, and we had loads of people on this. Like I say, it was in an indoor market, so people actually came into the, it's like an alcove sort of thing where the stall was set up, and yeah, some sod ran off with his Master System. It nearly cost me my job.
Oh man. But I'll tell you what, Dean, let me quickly tell you 10 must have Sega Master System games, because you've got the Sega Master System converter for the Sega Mega Drive, haven't you?
Yeah.
Right, now there's some games that you must have. The first game that you've got to actually have is Mickey Mouse, A Castle of Illusion.
Right.
It's a must.
Okay.
The second game on that list, I would say, is Spellcaster. It's sort of like a left to right scrolling RPG, anime. It's great. It's a great game. It's tough. It's interesting. I've never finished it, but it's got a special place in my heart, that game. Next up, Psycho Fox. It's a superb platformer. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing. Next on that list, I'd say Ghost House. Have you ever played or heard of Ghost House?
I've heard of it. Never played it. I've never played any of these games that you've mentioned so far.
Wow, Dean, honestly, we need to educate you in some Sega Master System. When we do like our own little Retro Asylum meetup, I want to have a Sega Master System there, and we've got to play through all these at some point.
Yep.
Double Dragon, like you mentioned, Dean.
Yeah, good game.
It's a great game. How many games am I on? Is that four or five?
I think that's four.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, let's leave it as four. There's loads of games that you can play. Now let's move on to the next Sega console, which is the Sega Game Gear. What was your view on that?
I remember one of my cousins having one, and he had the TV tuner. It was more or less a portable Master System, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it looked nice and everything, but it compared to the Game Boy, I always found it very, very chunky, and it certainly ate batteries up really fast.
Yeah, I remember that being the main problem with it. I don't think I actually ever played one.
I played it, but I mean, what I found that some of the games, they just seemed like rush ports of the Sega Master System version, and the conversions weren't that great to the Game Gear small screen, so sometimes they appeared very, very squished, and it didn't feel quite right. If games were specially made for this Game Gear, it worked well. It's not a bad little handheld, actually, truth be told, and I think I will pick one up at some point. Okay, should we move on to the next one? Probably my favourite Sega console ever, the Sega Mega Drive.
Yeah, great system. Again, I didn't own one at the time, but you know, I've got one now, and I do try and pick up as many games for it as I can because they are nice and cheap, and there are plenty of decent titles on it.
All right, name me three of your favourite Sega Master System games, Dean.
Easy. Road Rash 1, Road Rash 2, Road Rash 3.
So I take it you like Road Rash.
I like Road Rash. No, you've got, obviously, the Road Rash series, Desert Strike, Flashback's great on it. So
I was playing that today, actually.
There's three great games there.
I mean, for me, what have I been playing? I love Robocop versus Terminator. I just love the gore. I love the music. I love the arcade-style gameplay of that game. Sonic the Hedgehog, again, the reason why I love that was because it completely reinvented and helped Sega come alive, have like a mascot, because Alex Kidd wasn't really cutting it anymore. Another one for me would have to be Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion. Beautiful game.
You do love that game, don't you?
Yeah, but then again, Dean, you've got other games like Revenge of Shinobi. I mean, I gave you my spare cartridge of that.
Yeah.
You had the chance to play that.
I have played it, and I still prefer the original Shinobi.
Really?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I believe that, you know, the original Shinobi is a much better game.
Well, the Master System version's a lot better.
Yeah, and the arcade game. I still prefer the original gameplay of Shinobi compared to its sequel. To me, I don't know, it feels quite a bit different. I guess that, you know, the Revenge of Shinobi is a lot more suited to home playing.
Yeah.
But, I prefer the arcade game. Sorry.
Okay, mate. No, so I love the Sega Mega Drive. It's probably one of my favourite consoles. I don't have much time to play on real life. So I play it on emulation on my PSP.
Yeah.
I've been playing a number of different games on my journey to work. So next up, what was the next one? The Mega CD. Now, what is your view on this, Dean?
This is when they started just slapping things on the top of the Mega Drive. I've never actually played one.
No.
By this time, I don't know, Sega just seems to be coming across as a bit desperate to keep up with the SNES.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they did that, because to me, you know, the Mega Drive held its own, really, but they started bringing out all these different add-ons to their consoles, and for me, that's when they started making mistakes.
Would you consider getting one now? Have you found one for cheap?
Oh, if I got one cheap enough and I could pick, I don't know how much the games are, because it's not something I've really looked into, but yeah, if I could find any of these things cheap enough, I'd pick them up.
Yeah, I mean, me, I quite like it, actually. I find it quite charming, actually. I mean, it was something that I really wanted to get, and certain games really helped it, like Final Fight. I find Final Fight on the Mega CD is actually better than the arcade game. Graphically, it's a little bit grainy, but the music on that game, Dean, it's just out of this world. It's fantastic, and it's a game that I play to this day. Well, I play it on emulation, and if I see a Mega CD cheap, I think I'm definitely going to pick it up as well. So, yeah, it's not one that I had much experience with, but, you know, it's something I've always really wanted, and I'm going to get it. Just don't tell my wife.
Oh, women.
Yeah. Right, so next up is the 32X. What's your experience with this?
Again, I've not actually played one myself, and, you know, as I said before, it was the whole add-on thing. It seems to be like there's a few more interesting titles being released on it, but I don't know. It just seemed, again, like a bit of desperation on Sega's part. Did it play well?
What, 32X? Now, again, it's like Glenn was telling us a little bit about it. It just seemed like a cheap attempt to sort of like try and sort of bridge the 16-bit to the 32-bit. But why bring like so many consoles out at the same time when the Sega Saturn was coming out? People didn't know what to go for. Mm. I mean, it did have certain games like Virtual Fighter was better than the Virtual Fighter on the Saturn. But I think they should have done one or the other. They shouldn't have sort of like invested, I don't know, all that on the, you know, 32X and then on the Sega Saturn. I think they were just trying to do too much and it just didn't work, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's strange, you know. That's another discussion, I guess, for another show, in you know, how these manufacturers are doing so well, they're top of the game, and then they things up by releasing a strange product, or in this case, quite a few strange products. Is, you know, it was a weird sign.
All right, so next up on the Sega list is the Sega Saturn. Now, this is interesting, Dean. Now, I don't know if you can bring it up on the forum. It's on, actually, Retro Gaming, and it was done by Glenn, and it put Best Sega Console, Mega Drive, or Dreamcast. Now, there's an interesting debate, actually, because a lot of people on the forum, but they're not slagging off the Sega Saturn. They're just saying it wasn't as good. It was a little bit poor. The graphics weren't that great. And A Deadly Groove brings up an interesting point that the Sega Saturn was really actually underrated. It had some amazing games for it. And games aren't all about graphics. Games aren't all about early 3D. I think it's just, it was a great machine. It's just the PS1 was marketed better. It could do certain things better. And I think it was more easy to program for. But I think the Sega Saturn was a great machine, Dean. It's one of my favourite Sega consoles as well.
Again, with the Saturn, I think this was because Sega was so confused at what market they should be aiming for. You know, originally it was a 2D powerhouse, and it was only as they kind of responded to the PlayStation by bolting on these 3D elements, and, you know, it ended up it couldn't do 3D as well as the PlayStation. And, you know, by this time, everyone wanted 3D games, or at least that's what the publishers thought. They were throwing 3D games at us, and, you know, to a certain extent, that is what the public wanted. You know, you wanted all these first-person shooters, like, you know, it was stuff back then, it was like Doom, and you needed machines that could handle that sort of thing. Yeah, I don't think it was a bad console. I just think, you know, it was in that transition between 16-bit and 32-bit gaming. Well, 2D and 3D gaming. And, you know, they tried, but it didn't really pay off. I remember my cousin, I'm always talking about my cousin, because he used to buy everything as soon as they come out. And, yeah, he probably had that for a few months, and then the PlayStation, I think, got a Japanese version of that, and it did seem, you know, quite ahead compared to the Saturn.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at some of the games that's mentioned here, Dean, there's some absolute classics. There's like Castlevania, Symphony of the Night. That is the best version of one of my favourite games ever. It plays beautifully on that.
Yeah.
But you'll see a pattern on some of the games I'm mentioning here. Then you've got Marvel Super Heroes. The Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter.
Yeah, it was great at those sort of beat-em-ups.
Well, 2D style games, it really excelled in that, because that's where its strength was. But then again, you did have some other great games like Duke Nukem 3D, Fighters Mega Mix, which was fantastic, Fighting Vipers, Guardian Heroes. What was the other one? Knights? Was Knights one of them as well? Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so. I remember playing Sega Rally on it. It was a demo before the game came out, and I played that quite a bit. You know, it wasn't as good as the arcade game, but it was, fairly good for a home conversion at the time. That's probably the game that I played the most on it.
Okay, then. So we'll move on to the next Sega console, which was the Sega Dreamcast. What's your view on this then, mate?
Right, this was the first Sega console that I actually bought. I bought into the hype, stupidly. It wasn't a bad machine. It was actually, you know, pretty good. But the trouble was, a lot of the games were being developed for the PlayStation, first of all, and then they used getting these ports where, you know, they tarted the graphics up a little bit. There was obviously, you know, Sega's own games, which looked very nice, most of them. But I don't know, again, it was just, it tried, but, you know, by this time, they didn't have the publishers backing them up. You know, everyone knows that if EA had supported the Dreamcast, it probably could have survived a bit longer. They didn't touch it, and you know, it was a short-lived machine. It was a great machine. I really liked mine. Yeah,
but it did have some amazing classic games on it. What was that one you were telling me about? I can't pronounce it.
Shenmue.
Yeah.
Yeah, great game. And, you know, I remember I bought that on American import, and I played it over Christmas, and that was one of the last games where I put my heart and soul, you know, for a few days into it and completed it. Great, great game, and it really did showcase what the Saturn could do. You know, it was an amazing looking game at the time.
The Dreamcast, you mean?
Yeah, the Dreamcast, not the Saturn. Although there was a Saturn version in development, but yeah.
I did not know
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's on YouTube. You can find that. Yeah, it was a good console.
So do you think that was slightly let down then by the publishers and the companies didn't support it well?
Oh,
enough?
definitely. And I think Sega have blown so much of their, you know, their marketing budget on past consoles that didn't work out for them that they couldn't really get the funding it needed to get the word out there. Okay, they sponsored Arsenal. You remember the Dreamcast, yeah. Arsenal shirts and all that. But, it was a great console. It's a shame. But sometimes this, you know, this does happen in gaming where the better machine, you know, doesn't really pay off. Also, one thing I just remembered, of course, is it didn't have a DVD player. And,
definitely.
It came at a time... It came after the PlayStation, and PlayStation 2 was imminent. And everyone, I think, was looking for that machine. They wanted a DVD player, which the Dreamcast didn't have. The PlayStation 2 would have it. And I think, you know, the public just ended up holding out for the PlayStation 2.
Now, I think you're right. Everything you said there, I completely, totally agree with you, Dean. Dreamcast, really underrated. Didn't get the support it needed, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame because it is, you know... a decent console. It can, you know, there's still games being published for it today by homegrown developers, sort of thing, and you know, they're still pushing the boundaries on it.
All right then, mate, so we've got like a little poll on this that I put on the forum. Now, can you guess then which is the most popular and favorite Sega system that everyone's selecting?
I'm gonna say probably the Mega Drive.
Yeah, you're right.
Am I
actually
wrong? Yeah.
No, you're completely right. The Mega Drive got 50% of the votes. You want to know what came in that second place?
Yeah, go on.
It was a tie, actually, between the Game Gear and the Dreamcast.
Really? I'm surprised by that. I thought the Dreamcast would definitely be second.
Yeah, well, it's a complete tie, 25% and 25% for the other. So, yeah, that was a small little rust topic about the Sega, basically. Again, guys, I just want to quickly apologize that me and Dean had to put this podcast together at the last minute because real life, babies, wives, all getting in the way, you know, they just don't seem to understand.
Yeah, if you're tuning in about 5 years' time, we should have things sorted, but for the time being, it might be a rush, Jim.
We might have more kids by then.
No, that ain't happening.
All right, so let's move on to our iTunes reviews and then we'll start rounding things up. And we really appreciate these guys. It really helps the Retro Asylum podcast sort of just get us noticed a little bit more. And it just makes us sort of like, it's like a little pat on the back, you know, like well done, and makes us feel a lot more special. Now, the first one that I've got here is by Mikey J. Hay. He put Best UK Retro Gaming Podcast. Only recently discovered this podcast. If you're into retro gaming, then it's a must listen. And they cover games going all the way back to the ZX Spectrum and the late 70s and early 80s. Interesting mix of personalities of the host and some really interesting show formats. Great forum on the website too. Make sure you check that out as well. So yeah, thank you very much. Dean, you're up next.
Right, this is by Uniforex. Brilliant team of retro addicts, my number one listen. Right, he says, as someone who is fortunate to have grown up through the 80s home computer scene, I found listening to the team and their podcast have brought tons of great memories flooding back. If you love the retro computing scene, do not hesitate to subscribe to this feed. From home computers such as the Spectrum, Commodore 64, stroke Amiga, Amstrad, and more to consoles such as the Atari 2600, Mega Drive, SNES, and NES, I've got that back to front, PlayStation, and beyond, they cover it all. And great forums with a great bunch of people, can't recommend highly enough. Thanks, Retro Asylum team. You're welcome.
Right, so next up, our friend Useless is back.
Yeah.
I think he's changed his retro review. It's still 5 stars. He put, keep it retro. Love this back to basic show. No nonsense coverage of retro consoles and the respective games. Likeable presenters who have a genuine passion for retro. Also love the website, which keeps me updated with all things retro, including all the later retros. Does that sound wrong, he put? Games on the latest machines. Keep up the good work.
Right, the next one is by Captain Birdseye 69. Says, best podcast on iTunes. Well, that's big thing to say. It says, I only found this podcast about a week ago, and I've already listened to about 15 of them. Great topics are discussed by the presenters who truly have a passion. A passion for retro gaming.
Yeah.
And each presenter's got a speech impediment.
That's it. Okay, next up is probably the best name I've actually ever heard from an iTunes review. It's by Maria Whittaker 99.
Oh, there's a fault.
I wonder if it really is Maria Whittaker. She probably heard me talking about Barbarian and thought, I like the sound of this podcast.
Yeah, you never know.
Right, anyway, amazing podcast. Fantastic podcast. I look forward to listening to it every week. Keep up the great work, guys.
You're welcome, and thank you for such lovely reviews.
Yeah, so we've got a total of 78 iTunes reviews now, guys. We need 2 more to reach 80, and that would be fantastic. And you know what? We are the number one retro gaming podcast out there. We're not just the UK's number one retro gaming podcast. We are the number one retro gaming podcast. We've got more iTunes reviews than anyone else. And you know why, Dean? Because we've got the best listeners, and plus, we're not boring, I don't think.
Let's hope not, because otherwise people would have switched off by now. No, honestly, thanks, guys. The reviews really do spur us on to do more shows, and like Andy says, we now have more reviews than any other retro-based podcast. I don't know about others, but, you know, most of our reviews are 5 stars. I think there's one star where someone made a mistake and a 3-star review, which we all know about. But, yeah. You know, that to me speaks for itself. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. We do enjoy making them. So please do spread the words, you know, tell everyone about this show. The more people we get listening and the more people we get joining in on the forums, which I must say has really, really taken off now.
Big time.
And I said it on the last show, me and you recorded, I find it hard keeping up with a lot of the topics now, but that's a good thing, you know. So please, like I say, spread the word and whatever.
Right, Dean, thanks. We need to thank some people then.
We do. Glenn and Damien for stepping in for the last show.
Yeah.
Foggy for buying me a bacon sandwich.
You're ever grateful for that, aren't you?
Mate, it's a lovely bacon sarnie. And he bought it. I didn't have any change on me or something. I don't know.
Oh, that old
trick.
Yeah,
my shoelace was undone or something. Matt, you know, Darren on the site, everyone, and all our listeners. I just want to thank Mark Fixes Stuff on YouTube. Great YouTube channel. If you've got any problems with your computers, have a look on there, because, you know, he's doing lots of guides to fix these things and get them into working order.
Right, so first of all, I'd like to thank the whole Retro Asylum community, all our listeners, all our iTunes review, you know, everyone that's giving us iTunes reviews. I'd like to thank Hugh Dean. I'd like to thank Glenn. I'd like to thank Damien. I'd like to thank Matt. I always forget, I'd like to thank Darren as well, our forum moderator, because he keeps our forum nice and tidy.
He does a top job. He's a top man as well.
Foggy as well. I like the way he sounds like a jazz DJ with that sort of sleepy sort of voice. Yeah. Well done. And I want to thank Chris Wilkins again for giving us away 10 free tickets. We're completely behind you, Chris, on Revival. We can't wait to go there. I want Revival to be now. Once Upon a Console, guys, we will see you there. And if any of our listeners who live in London or will be in London on the 20th of March, please check out Once Upon a Console. And yeah, that's me done. See you next time.
Cheers, guys. See you soon.
Timmy Mallet, whack-a-day, coming from EastEnders Gay, shaken back, crack-a-jack, who did shoot J.R.? Pac-Man, He-Man, take a set, Walkman, Buckaroo, Emu, Michael Knight's car. Here's Filofax and Yup, here's Lockerbie, you and me, John Lennon, Sharp Dead, Mr. Men, Mr. Ben, Angie Watts, Dirty Den, Swap Shop, Tiz Was, Charles and I, getting wet. He didn't own an iPad, never heard of texting, only teletexting. We never owned an iPad, never used the sat nav, only old AA maps. Space Raiders, Darth Vader's, our white secret lemonaders, moon boots, shell suits, Michael Jackson's black, Willy Wonka, water plunker, playing with your favorite Tonka, Mrs. Mangle, eating spangles, Zambo high on smack, Mr. T.E.T. wearing pants for P.E., hungry hippo, Sam Fox, double denim, Fraggle Rock, speaking spell, Chaz and Dave, acid house in all the raves, gremlins were being mean, na-na-na-na-19. We didn't own an iPad, never heard of texting, only teletexting. We never owned an iPad, never used the sat nav, only old AA maps. Shoulder pads, crazy dads, being kicked in the nads, jelly shoes, naked gun, dusty bin in 3-2-1, BMX, Magwell, Sonny in his espadrilles, Roland Rat, Top Cat, Michael Fish, you lying twat. Connect 4, Big Daddy, Falklands War, VHS, Big Hair, Cheryl Baker's Underwear, Bullseye, Mr. Claypo, Devastation, Ninja Nobu, Soda Stream, Elvis Dead, Lionel Richie's Model Head. We didn't own an iPad, never heard of texting, only teletexting. We never owned an iPad, never used the sat nav, only old AA maps. Rubik's Cube's all the rage, Tommy Cooper dies on stage, Space Dust, Baldrick, Maradona was a prick, Ronald Reagan, Iron Lady, Blind Date, and a Test Tube Baby, Steve Davis, Different Class, Annika Rice's ass, Reading Biz, Smash Hits, Burning Wall, Smash to Bits, Freddy Krueger, I'm Afraid, rocking out to Live Aid. We didn't own an iPad, never heard of texting, only teletexting. We never owned an iPad, never used the sat nav, only old AA maps. Chopper, Grifter, Different Strokes, Shepherd Dog, John Noakes, Eric Mockham, Ernie Wise, watching Eddie Eagle fly, Metal Mickey, Mega Mog, drink Kiara with my dog, Button Moon, Love Boat, Half Pennies, Pound Notes, Zippy George, Frankie Says, swimming in my PJs, Stir Crazy, Fame and Bot, can I have a pee please Bob, Monkey Magic, Play Away, shops are closed on Sunday, Commodore 64, I can't take it anymore. We didn't own an iPad, never heard of texting, only teletexting. We never owned an iPad, never used the sat nav, only old AA maps. We never had a mobile, all our phones had wires and TVs were hired. We never owned a mobile, never had PlayStations, just imaginations. We never owned an iPad, never stabbed each other, just collected rubbers. We never owned an iPad, never wore low trousers, played in camps for hours. And now I'm that much older, it seems a world.
Right, wow, that's going to be fun editing.
Yeah, you got your work cut out there yet again, mate. But yeah, I think it'll work well once you get, you know, rid of all the crappy bits.
Yeah, I think it worked well last time. Once I tidied it up a little bit, it just flowed pretty well last time. That's probably, you know, the one we did last time was probably my favourite one.
Yeah.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 25, and is it episode... No, episode 20... Start again.
35.
Wow, God, start again. Hello everyone. Do you want to do the intro? I've forgotten how to talk.
I'll give it a try, I always sound really dodgy. Hello and welcome everyone to the latest episode of Retro Asylum.
You forgot to mention, Dean. Episode... Hold up, mate. You forgot to mention the UK's number one retro gaming podcast.
I'm rubbish at this. I think you should do.
All right. Mate, I mean, today... Oh, God, I don't know what I'm dropping, but...
There we go with the gang lesbian characters again.
Right, what is our next section? I've completely forgotten.
Hidden gem, is it?
Oh, have you got hidden gem?
No.
All right,
you had
I'll tell you what.
Arcade conversions.
Have you got an arcade conversion? I haven't got one.
Only Mikey, but I don't know if I've done the research before, but I've bloody forgotten all of it now.
Have you got an arcade conversion for us, Dean?
Not really.
Not really. All right. You know what? I think this is actually not turning too bad. I can sort of like really edit it where it just seems...
Yeah, sorry. I do say some random stuff though, don't I?
That's all right, mate. It's all right. What else are we choosers?
What page is that on?
That was on page 2 of Music from the Past. What's the name? Scopey, he chose The Spy That Loved Me from the Amiga version, but I've never heard it.
I think it's a bit funky, hang on. And I can't lose it with choices.
Alright, we'll start that again.
See you later.